The Last Execution, a historical city walking tour to listen to and experience. The friends of the castle and town of Münzenberg warmly welcome you to a special audio guide tour. Follow the traces of an exciting and tragically ending criminal case from the mid-18th century. You will experience the true story of Jacob Wagner, who committed a burglary in Münzenberg in August 1741. He is apprehended but manages to escape, yet some citizens take up the chase. Wagner is arrested again and put back in custody. On May 22, 1742, his life ends at the gallows of the castle town. This execution is considered the last one carried out in Münzenberg. But why? Why was Jacob Wagner the last criminal to be executed here? Join us as we walk through narrow alleys, past original locations, and learn about the highly bureaucratic legal system that was already in place at that time. The tour is based on historical facts, mostly sourced from the Count's archive of Solms-Laubach. The tour starts at the parking lot of the Münzenberg Cemetery and leads through Eichergasse into Trenkgasse to house number 29, where Jakob Wagner committed the burglary. Accompanied by interesting information about that era, we continue through the old town, along the old city wall with the Thieves' Tower, and up to the town hall. Finally, the route leads up to the castle, and then along the so-called gallows path, to the execution site located about a kilometer outside the town. Along the way, Benkes invite you to pause, listen, and reflect. This audio guide tour lasts between 1 and 2 hours and includes sections over cobblestones and steep paths. A barrier-free option and a historical city map are also available. We wish you an interesting and informative walk. Station 1, Untereichergate. Our audio guide tour begins here at the former Untereichergate, which was first documented in 1362. This gate was then the entrance to the Eicher suburb, a gradually emerging settlement before the actual city gate located higher up, the Obereicher Gate. Please step back to the traffic mirror and look towards Rockenberg. You can see a higher stone bench under a linden tree on the right side of the road. Such so-called resting benches lined all entrances to the city at that time. Since loads were primarily transported on the heads or backs of pedestrians in rural areas, these benches were created between the 16th and 19th centuries. Items could be conveniently set down for a rest and picked up again. But back to the western city entrance. At that time, the gates and doors were open on weekdays. It is not certain whether Jacob Wagner entered the town of Münzenberg through this gate, but it is possible. Station 2, Eichergasse 13. Please take a seat on the bench next to the fountain at Eichergasse 13. The beautiful half-timbered property dates back to 1798 and impresses particularly with the carved decorative forms of the courtyard gate and the fountain with its cast iron structure from the founding era. But now, let's travel back to a time long past. In 1668, there were 128 common citizens living in Münzenberg with their wives, 13 widows, and 192 children. The majority attended services at the Protestant church on Sundays, while about 20 individuals were Jewish. There were 73 residential houses and 48 vacant lots. Only about 330 people lived at the foot of the castle 20 years after the 30 Years' War. With its unimaginable devastation and loss of life, this great war accelerated Germany's economic decline. It also established the state fragmentation of the country. Austria and Brandenburg-Prussia emerged as internal German great powers at the end of the 17th and beginning of the 18th centuries, respectively. There were also many small states ruled absolutistically. Münzenberg was a so-called special case. The town was a shared inheritance. That is, in the year 1741, the year of the burglary, it was governed simultaneously by four authorities. The Landgraves of Hessen Castle, the Counts of Stolberg, the Counts of Solms-Braunfels, and the Counts of Solms-Laubach. Each of these was represented in Münzenberg by an administrator known as the Keller. All important matters required a joint decision. The economic situation at the beginning of the 1740s was dreadful. The Great Fire of 1725, which affected nearly 50 families, was followed by four more fires by 1740. The social interactions surrounding the Reconstruction were accompanied by great hardship, jealousy, arson, personal enrichment, and many other issues. This scenario forms the background for the events surrounding the execution. Station 3, Trenkgasse 29. You are standing in front of the house of Philip Grebe, a former citizen of Münzenberg, at Trenkgasse 29, formerly Trenkgasse No. 6. On August 4th, 1741, Jacob Wagner, who was born on February 9th, 1709, in Oppenrad, east of Gießen, broke into this house. As can be seen from the Hanau government protocol of January 29, 1742, Wagner was a long-known arch-villain and notorious thief who had broken the law several times before breaking into Münzenberg. The minute-taker states
that the aforementioned Jacob Wagner of Oppenrad is also guilty of several other crimes, that he is a dangerous vagrant, perjured deserter, a member of the notorious gang of thieves operating in the Wetterau region, and a branded villain who, due to various aggravated thefts, is a notorious person dangerous to public safety, who is also prone to murder and manslaughter.
While Jacob Wagner commits the crime, all members of the Grebes family are working in the fields, except for the 8-year-old child, Johann Balthasar. This boy will later identify the thief. Some townspeople notice the theft and pursue the burglar. He is finally caught by his pursuers in Grüningen and brought back to Münzenberg on August 16th by Corporal Kasper Weil, two citizens of Münzenberg, and the mercenary soldier from Hungen on a cart. His prison cell is already prepared and the guards are in place. The entrance portal of the burglar's house still bears the inscription Philips Grebe W, meaning Philip Grebe's widow, and the year 1754. This woman is Anna Elisabetha Walter, who married Philip Grebe on January 30th, 1727. A special note for you. On your way to Station 4, you will repeatedly encounter rewarding views of the well-preserved old city wall on your right. Particularly impressive is the view of the Bellersheimer Hof, an old Burgmannen house standing directly on the city wall with its associated thieves' tower, the basement of which still exists. Station 4, Obersteinweg Gate. You are now at the upper part of Steinweg, right next to the family doctor's practice. To your left and right, you can see the remnants of the city wall that dates back to the 13th century, which was once over a kilometer long. Until the mid-19th century, the monumental Obersteinweg Gate stood here, a massive stone structure 9 meters long, 9 meters wide, and 15 meters high. Jacob Wagner was arrested here on August 16, 1741. About 2 weeks later, he had to move to the Thieves' Tower at Bellersheimer Hof.
Los, komm schon, lauf!
The reason for this was the detention of his relative or accomplice, Elizabeth Gernroth, and her daughter, who were traveling with Wagner, and were also accused of theft. In the 18th century, good prisons were so costly that there was at most one in a larger district. While a jail was present in every village, they were constructed in such a way and were so poorly guarded that a detainee could easily escape and find safety beyond the borders if they wished. Jacob Wagner took advantage of this situation in early September. He managed to escape from his jail. Sought by wanted posters, he was eventually arrested in Oberwilstadt and brought back to Münzenberg to the town hall. During this incident, he severely injured Johann Heinrich Bien from Münzenberg with a knife. Wagner continued to resist the guards, causing disturbances in his cell and repeatedly attempting to escape. Therefore, on March 7, 1742, a Hanau guard unit of 12 regular soldiers entered Münzenberg for the third time to guard the very skilled escape artist, Wagner. It was considered to double the command and assign another 18 days, or leave the accused Wagner to the poor guarding of the Münzenbergers. Until his execution in May 1742, Wagner was housed in a total of 4 different places in Münzenberg. In the Obersteinweg Gate, the Thieves Tower, the Town Hall, and in the last week before his death, in a guest house. Please now follow the sign for Old Synagogue. You will pass by the Bellersheimer Hof with the Thieves Tower and soon see the cultural center Old Synagogue, which was renovated to a high standard by the city and the Friends of the Castle and Town of Münzenberg from 2005 to 2009 and is now used as a cultural center. Please continue to the churchyard of the Protestant Church with its distinctly twisted tower. Station 5, Churchyard. You are now in the churchyard of the Venerable Protestant Church in Münzenberg. Its core dates back to the 12th century during the Staufer period, just like the oldest parts of the castle that looms high above the town. The most famous pastor of this church, Heinrich Buff, passed away in 1724 at the age of 84, after 55 years of service. He was the great-grandfather of Charlotte Kessner, Goethe's great love, who became literarily immortalized in the novel The Sorrows of Young Werther. Buff did not witness the events surrounding Jakob Wagner, but was well aware of the highly complicated and merciless judicial system, which we would like to introduce to you now. The lower jurisdiction was exercised by a community jury, which punished violations of public order with fines or imprisonment. The high jurisdiction, on the other hand, was in the hands of the respective sovereign, in Münzenberg, held by the 4 so-called co-sovereigns, namely the 4 landgraves or counts previously mentioned. The high jurisdiction was also referred to as blood jurisdiction, or jurisdiction over neck and hand, as it had to decide on life imprisonment banishment, corporal punishment, and the death penalty. The use of torture to obtain evidence was permitted. Legal proceedings were conducted under the strictest application of the Neck Court Ordinance of Emperor Charles V from 1532, the Constitutio Criminalis Carolina. In Münzenberg, the responsible for construction official presided over the court. However, the actual judges were the blood jurors, who formed the court together with the presiding construction official in serious criminal cases. The burden of proof lay with the court, which had to prove the crime either through a confession or two testimonies from individuals of impeccable character. On March 13, 1742, the three noble Kellers, or administrators of Münzenberg, were summoned to the house of the Solms Braunfels Keller to take their blood juror oath in the case of Jakob Wagner. According to the Neck Court Ordinance, the offenders could be sentenced to burning, the sword, quartering, the breaking wheel, hanging, drowning, or being buried alive, depending on the nature and severity of the crime. Now please leave the churchyard towards Fahrgasse. On your way to the marketplace, you will pass the twin houses, two half-timbered buildings that were rebuilt after the devastating fire of 1725. Station 6, Marketplace. The marketplace is dominated by the impressive town hall, built in the Renaissance style in 1551, featuring stepped gables and half-timbered bay windows. Above the entrance portal, it displays the Münzenberg colors of red and gold, as well as the year construction began. The building and the square form the central scenery for the trial of Jakob Wagner and his two companions. On March 13, 1742, the presiding judge of the blood court, Amtmann Rollwagen from Hungen, had the thief Jakob Wagner subjected to painful questioning at the Münzenberg town hall by the Hanau executioner Nord and the Wilfersheim executioner Schissler in the presence of over 100 people. The torture instruments used were thumbscrews and Spanish boots, which are iron devices with spikes that are screwed onto the shin. Wagner admitted to some of the charges against him, but denied the theft of horses, copper, and cloth, as well as the murder of a Jew. An eyewitness, Keller Hitzel, reported to his lord, Count Christian August of Solms-Laubach, on the same day,
"Then the clerk Freidenberg read out the oath, and the four noblemen swore the oath with three raised fingers after the bailiff. All of them, as well as many Münzenbergers and strangers, went into the town hall chamber. There the bailiff, the clerk, chancellor clerk, and the four lordly Keller sat down at a table. And the inquisitor Jakob Wagner was also brought in. Then the bailiff told him that he could see the instruments of his torture lying and hanging there, so he should spare himself this torment and confess what he had already been asked about and what he had done. But Jakob Wagner replied that he had already confessed what he knew and had done. Whereupon he was unchained, tied to a chair, his hands bound and his big toes tied to the floor, his eyes blindfolded, and the two thumb irons and Spanish boots screwed on by the Hanau executioner and Wilfersheim knacker one after the other. Finally, he was also lifted up and pulled apart.
During this process, the bailiff and the executioner questioned the accused at all times in the presence of over 100 people sitting and standing nearby.
On May 17, 1742, Jacob Wagner was taken from his cell in the town hall to an inn, where he remained under guard until May 22nd.
Rein mit dir.
On this same day, Wagner, along with his relative Elisabeth Gernroth and her daughter, was brought before the blood court under the leadership of Amtmann Rollwagen, who pronounced the sentences. He broke his judge's staff and threw the pieces at Wagner's feet as a sign that the accused would be excluded from the community of his fellow humans due to his crimes and had forfeited his life. According to the Neck Court Ordinance, the verdict must be announced at least 3 days before the execution so that he may properly reflect on, lament, and confess his sin. Before the sentence is finally carried out, Jacob Wagner and the woman are given new clothes. They are then branded and pilloried in the market square, in front of the town hall, in front of a large crowd of onlookers. The blacksmith Adam Gore supplies the coals and two neck irons, one of which still hangs on the right side of the building today. Wagner's two companions are banished from the country forever. Elisabeth Gernroth is later stripped naked from the waist up, tied to a rope, and taken to the border under constant blows. In view of her youth, her daughter is spared further punishment, given a small allowance, and sent to Kassel. The files do not reveal whether the two were separated. We recommend that you turn right from the market square and then left, climbing steeply up to the castle ruins. The next stop on the tour is located in front of the castle gate. It can be assumed that the path to the gallows led directly down Eichergasse. You are welcome to follow this street to avoid the steep climb. Almost at the end of Eichergasse, turn left onto the path in den Hirschgarten. Station 7, Linden Tree in front of the castle gate. After a strenuous climb, you now have time to rest a little in front of the entrance to Münzenberg Castle. You are sitting in front of one of the largest Stauffer castles in Central Europe, the oldest parts of which date back to the 12th century. Jacob Wagner had already seen the castle as a ruin, because long before the Thirty Years' War, the complex had become of no interest to its owners in terms of defense, so they allowed the castle to fall into disrepair. At this peaceful spot, we will now take the opportunity to tell you more about the extensive bureaucracy involved in the criminal case of Jacob Wagner, which was part of the legal system at the time. The procedure initiated in such legal violations was precisely prescribed and very extensive. All persons involved in the criminal case and their entourage, as well as the services rendered and the associated expenses, are meticulously documented and accounted for. No fewer than 187 invoice items are still available in the archives today. One of the first cost items is the messenger's fee for Caspar Weil, who had to bring this news to Hungen on August 4th, the day of the break-in. Cost, 5 albis. Countless other expenses follow. For example, the payment of the Bellersheim surgeon Johann Jakob Keller, who treats Johann Heinrich Bien, who was stabbed by Jacob Wagner. Cost, 13 guilders, 15 albis. The studiosus Hempel, who has to record all the interrogations, the visiting officials, the stately Keller, soldiers, craftsmen, day laborers, and so on and so forth, also earn very well. For example, the chairman of the blood court, construction officer Rollwagen, certifies expenses for food on the day of the execution and the day before for a good 20 people with their horses, amounting to an incredible 26 guilders. The claims of the Vasenmeister and executioners also represent a large item. The Vasenmeister were closely associated with the penal system and took on tasks as assistants and servants to the executioners if they did not already hold this office at the same time. Since this profession did not exist in Münzenberg, they had to be called in from outside for every little thing that concerned the thief. For example, Jacob Wagner, who was imprisoned in iron, was handed over to the Münzenbergers again after his escape. The executioner had to be brought in specially from Lich to unlock his shackles. They usually came with their entire family, stayed overnight, and had to be fed, which had a considerable financial impact. In 1742, a total account of the Wagner criminal case was drawn up. It amounted to 911 guilders, 23 albus, and 4 pfennigs. One guilder is equivalent to 30 albus, and one albus is worth 8 pfennigs. To give you an idea of this enormous sum, here are two price comparisons. A master carpenter earned 15 albus per day. He would therefore have had to work for 5 years to cover the total cost of the execution, working continuously, including Saturdays, Sundays, and public holidays. During the Great Fire of 1725, the two stately gates, the Obereicher Gate and the Obersteinweg Gate, were destroyed. The reconstruction of the two enormous gates between 1731 and 1735 cost more than 918 guilders. This sum corresponded almost exactly to the amount spent on the arrest, detention, painful interrogation, and execution of Jacob Wagner. These examples clearly illustrate how costly the entire criminal proceedings, including execution, were at that time. Continue downhill on Bike Path 6 and take the first right turn to reach the Altstädter Gate behind the Hatsteiner Hof. The next stop is located below the early Gothic Gate at the bench next to the small archway of the Swinger Wall. Station 8, Altstädter Gate. You are now sitting in front of Münzenberg's last remaining city gate, the Altstädter Gate, which was built around 1300. The total bill drawn up by Johann Caspar Schmidt, Keller of Solms-Braunfels, for the embarrassing trial against Jacob Wagner is inspected by a Hessian Hanau official on April 22, 1743. The aim is to verify the legality and amount of the individual items on the bill on the basis of the receipts available. The costs incurred in the course of the trial are so high that there are fears that it will no longer be possible to make payments from the joint fund, the so-called castle construction fund. According to a memo,
the enormous costs that are depleting the castle construction capital are to be moderated
for the upcoming building authority meeting. This means that savings must be made in the invoice amounts claimed. Not only are the invoices of the executioners and waste disposal masters not recognized at this amount in the audit, but the sometimes excessive claims of officials and lawyers are also reduced, as they are obliged to carry out their activities within the scope of their official duties anyway, according to the auditor. However, he fully agrees with the expenses for materials and craftsmanship. The costs of the Jacob Wagner criminal case are reduced to 2/3 of the actual claims as a result of the review, but still represent a very high amount, which places a considerable burden on the castle construction fund and prevents investment in important municipal projects. On Tuesday, May 22nd, 1742, a procession of many people sets off from the marketplace to the Münzenberg gallows with Jacob Wagner at its center. They are accompanied by several soldiers from neighboring communities. Three clergymen and a crowd of people are also part of the procession. The delinquent is given an earthenware jug of wine and a glass as provisions for the journey for sustenance. The path to the Münzenberg gallows leads straight ahead for about 1 kilometer along a beautiful walnut tree avenue. However, you now also have the option of ending the tour without visiting the execution site. If you wish, you here can listen to the information about the Last Station 9 and the Highwayman's Song as part of the audio guide tour. Then continue along the path for a short distance until you come to a crossroads. Here, turn right down the path in den Hirschgarten. Coming from below, this is most likely the route the procession of people took on the day of the last execution. You will then arrive at Eichergasse, or the parking lot at the cemetery. Station 9, Gallows. The brick Münzenberg gallows is one of the few remaining places of execution in the former province of Upper Hessen in the Landgraviate of Hessen-Darmstadt. The pillars of the gallows stand on a hill that is now covered with bushes and trees. You can reach the site by climbing a small staircase just before the end of the path. You are welcome to take a seat on one of the sandstone blocks that have been placed there. Hexagonal pillars rise from 2 rectangular quarry stone bases made of basalt and quartzite, supporting a crossbeam on their rounded tops. The originally unplastered pillars have now been extensively grouted to prevent further decay. At one time, the crossbeam bore the inscription Law and Justice in Münzenberg, Oberhörgern, and Eberstadt. That this high court was indeed responsible for these places is evident from a death sentence by hanging carried out in 1513, which, according to the protocol, was pronounced by the court of Münzenberg, Hörgern, and Eberstadt, according to ancient custom. During the execution of Jakob Wagner, Major von Lingelsheim from Laubach ensures order with the help of several soldiers. He is supported by 2 additional groups from Wilfersheim and Gambach. The soldiers and their assistants cordoned off the area around the place of execution with their rifles held across their chests. Only the clergymen, the legal persons, the executioners, and the condemned man were allowed inside the closed circle, while the common people stood outside. A heavy-duty double ladder with 3 rungs was built especially for the execution, so that one of the 3 executioners, Peter Nord from Hanau, could climb up to place the noose around the condemned man's neck and push him off the ladder. On May 22, 1742, Jacob Wagner was the last person to die at the Münzenberg gallows. After the execution, the dead man was left hanging on the gallows for a long time. The duration was often specified in the sentence. Displaying the corpse on the gallows was part of the punishment, served as a deterrent, and was also intended to encourage people to live law-abiding lives. Afterwards, the remains were buried near the place of execution. According to the views of the time, those sentenced to death were dishonorable and therefore not allowed to be buried in consecrated ground in the cemetery. Wagner's conviction was in line with the legal understanding of the time. The Constitutio Criminalis Carolina of 1532, the first general German criminal code, modernized the previously very arbitrary and inconsistent criminal justice system and restricted the use of torture. However, it allowed torture in serious cases and provided for cruel punishments to be carried out in public, a theater of horror. Even today, torture and executions are still widespread throughout the world, although Articles 3 and 5 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights grant every human being the right to life and prohibit torture or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. United Nations, December 10th, 1948. Our tour ends here at the Munzenberg Gallows. You are welcome to listen to the Highwayman's Song, a folk song that glorifies the life of a robber and pokes fun at the death penalty in lyrical form. We wish you a pleasant stay in Munzenberg and a safe journey home. Highwayman's Song. Es gibt doch kein schöner Leben.
La 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 la. Es gibt doch kein schöner Leben in der ganzen weiten Welt als das Straßenräuberleben, Morden um das liebe Geld. In den Wäldern herumzustreifen, große Leute zu erreichen. Fehlt es uns an Geld oder Kleid, bringen zu uns die Gäste heut. Fehlt es uns an Geld oder Kleid, bringen zu uns die Gäste heut. Ein Herr dahergegangen, greifen wir ihn ernsthaft an. Mit seinem Geld darf er nicht prangen, denn wir sind ein Räuberband. Kommt eine Kutsche oder Wagen, tun wir sie nicht lange fragen. Hauen, stechen, schießen, tot. Ist das nicht ein schön Stück Brot? Hauen, stechen, schießen, tot. Ist das nicht ein schön Stück Brot? Sehen wir Galg und Räder stehen, bilden wir uns ernsthaft ein. Einmal muss es noch geschehen, einmal muss gehangen sein. Dann steigen wir aus dem Weltgetümmel, auf einer Leiter gen Himmel. Lassen uns vom Wind schwecken aus oder ein, bis wir abgefaulet sein. Lassen uns vom Wind schwecken aus oder ein, bis wir abgefaulet sein. Lass den Leib am Galgen hangen, denn er ist der Vögel Speis. Lass ihn hin und her sich wanken, bis die Knochen werden weiß. Lass ihn nicht ruhen in der Erde, von den Würmern gefressen werden. Weitaus schöner ist's in der Luft als in einer toten Gruft. Weitaus schöner ist's in der Luft als in einer toten Gruft.